Hi everyone, this is John Pearson. I'm just talking to you here from a video. I'm going to have a conversation, as you might be able to see from the screen, with Doug McCubbin. Now, Doug is an expert on sales and local taxes. SALT, isn't that how you refer to it, Doug? Sales and local tax consultant?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Multi-state, yeah.
Fantastic, and welcome to the training that we're going to do for our guys here. And thanks so much, Doug, for taking your time, because I know particularly this time of year things are busy for you, but this is such a big headache for people starting their e-commerce businesses on Amazon or Walmart or eBay and Shopify that it's really an important topic to get addressed. So I've got a bunch of questions for you, Doug, and everyone, Doug has very kindly offered to answer our questions, and also there's going to be a link down the bottom of this video later if you want to get in touch with him directly, because he is an expert on this area. So Doug, can we get right into it? And well, if you want to introduce yourself any way better than I have already, but let's start by talking about a little bit of intro from you, and then what exactly is sales tax and how does it work for the point of view of a vendor or physical products in particular.
Okay, great. JP, well, thanks for the invite. I do appreciate the ability to kind of share my knowledge, and I'm hoping that everyone in the audience walks away with quite a few of their questions answered and a little bit more focus on next steps or what they have to do in this area. Sales tax to an outsider looking into the U.S. Can be perplexing, like most tax codes looking across country borders. But basically, sales tax is the tax on every time there's an exchange, a purchase, tangible personal property or services within the states, there's a sales tax added to it. Unlike that, where it's the final consumer pays the tax, sales tax happens with each and every purchase. About 45 of the states have sales tax. There's five states that don't: Alaska, Delaware, Montana, New Hampshire, Oregon. And what it consists of is that historically, sales tax always taxed tangible personal property. A lot of it got started, sales tax, back in the depressions in the 40s. But if I buy a cup of coffee, if I buy a hat, if I buy a desk, there's sales tax on it. And I'd have to pay the sales tax, and whoever sold it would have to collect the sales tax and then file a return with the individual states. So if I'm in Texas and I make sales in other states, and we'll get to when I have a compliance, I actually have to collect sales tax for each and every the different states that I actually deliver to. So to me, the main thing is if I'm selling online, which is most of the members of the audience, and I'm selling into the U.S., I'm probably going to be using Amazon, eBay, Walmart. I may even have my own website. And so the first thing is I'm probably selling a product, a wallet, a poster, something to that effect. And it's mostly likely subject to tax, and versus a digital product. If I'm selling software, that's usually taxable. If I'm selling an online service where software is a service, people dial in and use the software, that's not taxable in all states. It can be in some. But for our conversation, we're going to focus mostly on the tangible personal property. So I'm selling in a state. Let's just look at one state. I'm selling product. I'm selling desk. It's subject to tax. The only way that desk would not be subject to sales tax is if my customer was exempt, a nonprofit, a government entity. They can buy things tax-free. The other is if it said so in the code. So some states exempt pharmaceutical prescriptions, or clothing, or water, or food are common exemptions across the states. But most everything else will default as tangible personal property in general as a category. Services then are unique in that a service actually has to be defined in that state. Most states don't tax services. There's about a dozen states that tax about 15 to 20 services, like cleaning services, data processing, those types of activity. So that's the basic function of sales tax. So just to recap, it's always on tangible personal property or a service if that state does define a service as being taxable. 45 of the states do have sales tax. It ranges from anywhere from 6 to 8.5%, different rates for the different states. All tangible personal property will be subject to tax unless I'm selling to a government entity, I'm selling to a nonprofit, it says so in the code, like water is exempt in many states, or there's a specific exemption for manufacturer if you're using it in a specific way. So that's kind of the basic background of sales and use tax in the U.S.
Fantastic. Thanks, Doug. And so just before, I know we're going to talk mostly about physical products, tangible products, but just to, because a lot of people who are my subscribers also sell digital services of one sort or another. Well, sorry, not services, but digital products. So I think you mentioned that digital products, just before we leave that, are not taxable in all states, but they are taxable in some. Is that correct?
Yeah, so software, which is really a digital product.
Yep.
But almost all the states will define software as tangible personal property. They just changed the definition in the code. So most software sold on the internet would be subject to tax. Some few exceptions. Some states will allow a very, very small amount that if I just download the software, it's not taxable versus, if I had sent a disk or an old tape, think about old school technology here. But in today's model, like software as a service, if I have an online calendars system that I use and that people pay me $10 a month to have this fancy calendar that will do extra things that Microsoft doesn't do, that's software as a service. And there's about 13 states that tax software as a service. Not all states do, but some states do tax software as a service. So it's hit and miss when it comes to when I say digital products, I'll put them in two buckets. Software is going to always be taxable, but software as a service, other things that you provide or information services, digital type services that you may provide in the other states, it's probably going to be the exception that it's going to be subject to tax, but there are some states that do tax it.
Okay. Great, but all is not completely lost, because I know we're going to talk next about Nexus and when you actually, so something might be taxable, but you may still not have a requirement to collect and remit sales tax, and that's this funny thing called Nexus. Is that right, Doug?
Yeah, Nexus is the term we use in the U.S. where it's the minimum connection with the state for that state to be able to impose its rights onto you, the seller, to collect and remit sales tax to that state. And so the minimum connection, and I'm going to go through a general and then focus on just the online version. Generally, it's I have an office in another state, or I have an employee that lives in another state, or I have inventory in another state. So I may sell from Oklahoma, but I may have inventory in California and Florida. Well, that inventory in California and Florida would create nexus. So it's office, place, inventory, where your people are. And then in sales tax, there's an area called agency. So if I give someone a commission for sale, so I'm located in Iowa, and I don't have any employees, but I've got commission salespeople all over the U.S. So if I pay them a commission, I now have created a nexus in that state. So if I'm from Iowa and there's a individual in Nebraska that sells farm equipment for me, and I pay him a 10% commission on that sale, that commission will create nexus in that state. So let's translate that to the online working through Amazon, eBay type setting. I'm not going to have employees in states. I'm not going to have an office in any state. I may have inventory. So I'm not going to create nexus with an office. I'm not going to create nexus with an employee. But if Amazon requires me to have consigned inventory at one of their service centers, I now have property in that state, and that inventory will create nexus. From an agency point of view, most websites don't pay commission, but there are some that will use what people will refer to as click-through revenue, where if I'm on one site and an ad comes up, and boy, that looked exciting, and I click on it, and it brings me to your site, where you're selling a product to Amazon, and then I buy it, and it records that through my advertisement on my site, you paid me a commission, not an advertisement fee, but a commission, then whatever states that I'm in, you now have nexus in. Now, that's not real common. I haven't seen that model used extensively for what I consider mid-tier web sales out there, particularly through the forums like Amazon, eBay, and those areas. But it's something to keep in mind. It's usually your inventory that's going to create your nexus. You're doing business in the U.S., you'll have to pick one state that you're doing business in and have a register requirement. You'll then, if you have inventory, it's usually what I'm seeing is on the web is Amazon will require, I can't remember what their count is. They keep on growing the number of their service centers, distribution points. But I've seen some vendors have to keep the inventory in 7-10 locations. In each one of those locations, if they're a separate state, you would then have a nexus requirement. Then you would be responsible to charge the sales tax, the correct rate for that state, and then put it on sales tax return and remit it.
Okay, so let's summarize that then. And for the simple case of e-commerce sellers, most likely, unless they have an office or an employee in a state, most likely it's going to be states where their inventory is held by Amazon or any other warehousing that they use. They're going to have nexus with that state and therefore be legally, am I right in saying they are now legally required to collect and remit sales tax in that state?
That's correct. And okay. The inventory, it has to be consigned inventory, so it's held by them. If I have a complex product, say like a large printer, and I have to custom deliver it, and it goes to, you know, goes to freight, and it gets offboarded into a bonded warehouse, it may sit there, and then somebody else will come pick it up. As long as that's in the commerce stream, that doesn't create consigned inventory. It's only when I have the right, it's my property, I have insurable risk at sending in somebody else's warehouse that they will draw from in order to fulfill my sales.
Okay, fantastic. And that is also going to include, in this case then, so consigned inventory, by that definition, that would be products that are being stored in Amazon warehouses that I still own. That would fall into that category of consigned inventory and generate nexus between me and the state in which it's being held. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So I think let's just review where we got. So on sales tax in general, tangible products, certainly, apart from some limited exceptions, digital products, only a few states if it's software as a service. But that's the applicability of sales tax. The requirements for any of us businessmen to pay, collect and pay sales tax depends on nexus, i.e. some connection with that state, which in e-commerce case is going to be through, most likely through holding inventory that you still own that is held in that state, or it may be in an Amazon warehouse. So if I'm right on that little review so far, that what that brings us to is, what do our guys do now? Because I know most people who are selling small businesses, running them from home, either US residents or international residents around the world, have probably not taken the step of either registering for sales tax or remitting or collecting sales tax on their sales or paying them to the state. So what are the options that we all have if we've been breaking the law so far, but maybe in a fairly small way? What are the options for getting on the right side of the law? And should we do so, or can we take a risk on it?
Yeah, that is the question. And most of the questions I get from clients that are internet selling items on the internet, they've been doing it for a while. So the steps are straightforward. It's the same steps as if I'm about to start, or I have been doing it only for a couple years, or I've been doing it longer than 4 years. The statute of limitations for most states is 4 years. So if I've been doing it more than 4 years, it's unlikely that a state will reach back beyond the 4 years. But let's say I've been doing it for 2 years. So the very first thing that I should be doing, what's my total sales? Do I know what states they're being delivered to? Do I have any inventory in any of those states? Do I have employees in those states? Most likely not. In the facts that we're looking through, is probably just going to be inventory. So do I have a solid fact that, you know, I'm selling in all 50 states here in the U.S., but I've got consigned inventory in Arizona? Well, I clearly have an obligation to collect the Arizona, the sales that are made online through Amazon to Arizona. And so then what is that dollar amount? And how much have I, what exposure do I have? And so if I hadn't reported it, to report it, you're going to have a 10% penalty plus interest. and the interest runs roughly about 10% too. So it's a 20% penalty on the tax. Plus, you didn't collect the tax, and so your likelihood of going back and getting the tax from your customer is pretty small. So it really is, even though it's a consumer tax and it's owed by the buyer, it really becomes the company's risk. And that's why it's important to kind of go through these calculations right up front. A retail sale to a retail consumer, your likelihood of collecting tax after the fact is almost nil. Or you may collect it but then lose a customer if you're in a repeat customer business. If it's two-way business, you know, it's business goods, then there is a chance to be able to recover, hey, we didn't charge you tax, and they may have self-accrued the use tax themselves if it was a business. But I think for our discussions, I suspect that most of the internet sellers are to individual consumers, probably not as much to business, and the products are going to be taxable, and so we just have to determine what states it is due in.
That's correct. So, I don't think there's any chance of going back and recovering sales tax. So we're talking about small ticket retail sales. So yeah. You're correct. So in that case, then the back tax responsibility effectively falls to the business, to the seller.
It does. And then, so there's not only the cost of penalties and interest, there's the cost of also getting it corrected, getting the returns done, or cost of an audit, if you get an audit notice, those types of stuff, which sometimes exceeds what the tax amount is in order to get compliant. And so once we know what that dollar amount is, it may be material, it may not be, that's relative to the seller. But once we have that and we determine, hey, so in my example, we have an obligation in Arizona. The very minimum we need to do is go out and get a sales tax permit for Arizona, go out and get permitted, and start collecting Arizona sales and use tax. And so on all the sales that go to Arizona, you would collect the sales and use tax, and then you would start remitting it to the state of Arizona. And at least from that point forward, the exposure will start going down because you've corrected it. So in 2, 3, 4 years, when statute goes by, you won't have an exposure. And say you get an audit notice in 2 years, the 2 years are going to be okay, and you're only going to have 2 years worth of sales that you did have an exposure. So the importance is, once I know where that obligation is, let's get it started. Let's go get a permit application. Let's start collecting. Let's not add to the exposure. So then typically what I find is I'll have a client that may have 3 or 4 states that they're due because they have consigned inventory in several different states. And usually the toughest decisions are, I don't have a large amount of sales per year. Maybe it's a million or less. And now I'm have obligations in 10 states. And it's maybe less than $10,000-$20,000 per state, which is only $1,600 roughly per state of sales and use tax, and then my compliance cost may equal or exceed what the sales tax is. So once we know where my footprint is and where I do have an obligation, what is my total sales, what do I want to do around reporting? We've helped clients with, hey, I had a reporting responsibility for 30 states, but it was less than a couple $1,000s per state and of sales. So the sales tax is less than a couple $100. Well, the cost and compliance may exceed what the risk is. And so your choice is, hey, do I just not file, knowing that it's not that large in any one state? It would never be a large risk factor. Other options that we've walked through with clients is, the state that you do have nexus in, just charge sales tax on all sales. And it's not correct, but as long as you remit it to a state, and then you have no risk, because then if another state knocks on your door and says, hey, you owe me $500, you would amend one sales tax return and can reduce that return and send the $500 off to the other state. There'd be a little penalties and interest associated. So depending on what your total sales are, how many states you have nexus in, who your customers are, is your product taxable or not, you'll come up with a couple different ranges of solution. The number one is you're going to at least report in one state. Do we start reporting in, often enough, I have a client that has 10, 15 states that they have a nexus. we'll report in at least the top three or four. Maybe the ones that only generate a few hundred dollars a year, we'll wait until it gets material per year and then add it to the compliance mix. So total sales, what states, what's my real answer? Where do I have nexus? What's that sales by state? What states am I under obligations for? And then what are my solutions? And all of those are, we need to start reporting at least one state, if not at least the material states. The minor states, whether you report or not, that's a business decision. And this is something that you'll take a look at from year to year to year as your sales grow.
Okay, so just to summarize that last point, which was an interesting one I've not heard before. So you're suggesting one sort of halfway solution is you collect for all the states that you have nexus in, even if one you're only selling like one widget a year to. And then worst case, if they come after you, you've already collected the tax, you've just got a small bit of work to do to correct one return and put it into the other state where it belongs.
Yeah, and we've done that. It's not technically correct, but as long as the tax is sent to the state, you never collect sales tax and not remit it. That's a felony in most of the states. That's not something that we're proposing, but we'll have, if a client's located in Texas and say most of its sales are in four states of which they're permitted in collecting tax, but they send a $200 sale to Iowa once a year, that's probably not worth the cost of doing compliance. Nor is the risk great. But if you wanted to make sure you as a company never had any risk, just simply charge the Texas tax, remit it to Texas, call it a Texas sale, and move on. And if anyone, client complains or a state comes in, it's easy enough to correct. So okay. It's another approach.
Okay, that's great. So whether we just get permitted for a couple of main states or if we go for all of them, how is my potential exposure going to affect that decision? Because we've got the potential of penalties. So if we go back and we report everything for the last 4 years, say we're going to pay a 10% penalty, 10% interest, plus the cost of getting it done. What's the alternative in terms of trying to avoid having to go back those 4 years and just start from now? So you said the other thing we all definitely should be doing is get sorted out now, start from now, correct the problem. But what about that issue of the last few years that we might have been selling without collecting sales tax? How can we approach trying to avoid having to pay the tax without giving ourselves potentially more exposure by being in penalty?
Yeah. Well, the first is we got to calculate what that is. And then the primary issue is turn on a permit to stop the bleeding of the exposure. And then of that dollar amount, when you file for a permit in a state, they may do a desk audit. They may inquire and go, well, how long have you been doing business? And you have to be truthful on that application. And they may come out and audit for that gap in time. They may not. It's kind of hit and miss. It's not an absolute. And so you can just sit and wait. At some point, statute does not ever expire if I do not file a return. From a practical matter, though, most states review a four-year statute. So if you do get an audit notice down the road, but they would only look back 4 years. So the sooner we get a permit filing, then as time goes on, that will close out that four-year period for that state. So it would simply wait and see. If you don't want to pay it, you can file the back returns with penalties and interest, and then it's done. Then you don't have any exposure. And I think part of that fact situation will be is, do I have a large exposure and is it in more than one or two states? And sometimes we'll take with a client, maybe we'll take care of one state this year, then the next year take care of the next state. There are some amnesty programs going on. Some of the individual states, and they'll waive the penalty. But I think for most clients that are listening, their sales are probably $2 million and below. And when you think about doing a voluntary disclosure, a process to get the back paid for, the cost to do that may exceed the tax also. So often, knowing what that dollar amount is, just start the compliance so as to stop the risk increasing. And it's just, if you get an audit notice, you already know what that liability will be. You've had the work already done. It'll be a simple process because sometimes even the corrections, you know, if I've got $1,000 per state for 15 states that I have nexus in, sometimes that cost of that correction is a lot more than the $15,000. And so it's just a business decision.
Okay. So would there be any greater exposure to penalties if I get an audit? So what we're suggesting is one option for people that they might choose, and obviously we're not recommending this, but they might choose to get permitted and get started and rectify the problem, but not to make a voluntary a submission of their back taxes. And if they get audited, well, then they're going to have to pay them. And if they don't get audited and 4 years have passed, you know, they're in the clear. So if I'm right on that, is there any greater penalty that will be due if you get audited than if you make a voluntary disclosure?
No, the only difference is that the voluntary disclosure, often they'll waive penalty versus in an audit they won't. But if we're talking about such small dollars, say like it was $2,000 worth of tax for a state, you know, the 10% is $200. So, I mean, it's not going to have a big impact one way or the other. Your cost of doing that is probably going to be more than $2,000. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So just because this is probably something that a number of people will want to pursue because, you know, they'll have got their business started. Sales would have been slow in the early days. We're not talking about millions. We're probably not even talking about hundreds of thousands when people begin to say they've got a business that's now growing. Okay, so now it's time to get sorted out and get sales tax taken care of. So we're probably talking about fairly low amounts. And so I expect this is going to be, you know, a strategy that some people will choose. And so, again, you're going to go through the process of getting registered or permitted for the sales tax. You're going to put a start date for when you started business with Nexus to that state, which will be true. So that might be 18 months, 2 years ago. But you're just going to start remitting sales tax from the next quarter or whatever. Is that, in a nutshell, what we're talking about here?
That's exactly it. And that's why it's important to know what that number is right up front. And so then you can make that decision.
Okay. Because if the number was a bigger number, you're suggesting you might want to make the voluntary disclosure to hopefully avoid the 10% penalty. Is that correct?
Yeah. You may want to just to get it behind you because you know it's there and you're more likely to be a target.
Yeah. Okay. So a big number, just a big number in terms of the back taxes that were due just means essentially your exposure to this risk is higher and therefore it may be a risk you want to knock on the head now with a voluntary disclosure. If it's a small number, you know, you may be happy to carry that for a few years and just hope it goes away because of the cost and hassle of making that voluntary disclosure.
Yeah, and that's the spot on approach.
Okay.
The critical thing is to get a permit started and to know what that number is before you start that permit.
Okay. All right, so that's clear. So but we're definitely telling people they should be truthful about the start dates that they put on their application forms to sales tax to that state, and then it's up to them whether they choose to make a voluntary disclosure for bank taxes or just wait for the audit and hope it doesn't come. What about
That's absolutely. I mean, on the date when you do the application, you do have to put when did you start doing business in the state, and you absolutely have to be truthful on that. That changes the if you were to get audited, they could increase the penalties due to that misinformation. And so, but most states' resources are pretty tight, so the likelihood of smaller sellers, they're not going to get audited at the same frequency as the larger ones.
Okay, that's all clear. So those are really my two options. I want to get registered and stop the bleeding, and then I either want to do a voluntary disclosure or wait for the audit. I hope it doesn't come. But let's talk about, is there a third option? Is there a way, particularly for international sellers, to avoid this altogether and just say, I'm not going to bother? Because I live in the UK, I live in Australia, I live in New Zealand, and you know, the state of New York is not gonna get me over here anyway. So why should I bother? How would you address someone thinking that way?
I have clients like that they're in a competitive situation, and there's three or four in that market space, and they all don't have nexus, and so they manage not to have nexus because if they have to charge sales tax, they lose market share. So same concept, if I'm overseas and I want to hit the U.S. market, but I don't want to be in the compliance activity. Take a look at what you're doing. If somebody wants consigned inventory, that's going to trigger Nexus. That's going to trigger compliance. And if I've got consigned inventory in Arizona, we'll pick on Arizona again because I'm selling through Amazon. But if I'm also selling product elsewhere from the same entity, all my sales to Arizona, I have to collect sales tax, not just the ones going through Amazon. So you have to take a look at, I don't want to create Nexus producing activity. So I don't want to have click-through commissions, and I don't want to have inventory on site. Everything will be ship common carrier through the postal freight systems, and I won't trigger Nexus.
Sure.
And then you won't have a collection responsibility.
But what about if you do? So what about if I say, as a Brit or as an Australian, well, I understand this, and I've got my inventory in Amazon warehouses, so I've got Nexus with a bunch of states, so I know those states, actually, their state laws require me to submit taxes, but I'm just not going to do it because I don't believe they're going to get me in the UK or in Australia. Is that overly simple thinking, or is that true, do you think?
Well, I think it can be. I think there's some truth to it. There's a little bit, and I'll walk through that. You know, states have limited resources, but they're all getting better at discovering who's doing business in their states.
Yep.
And the topic of internet sellers not being obligated to collect in the states has been somewhat of a political fodder in articles and such. But the states haven't been able to bolster their Nexus standard. Their Nexus is that they haven't been able to. Some states have put an economic Nexus that if I have X amount of sales in a state, then I have to collect. But for the most part, you have to have people, physical property, a commission. So, and if I don't have those, then I'm not going to have a collection. But if I did, and I get it started, and I know what that number is, I've got to have it in the back of my mind that they may knock on my doors and I may have an audit. And I'll have to write out that amount plus the penalties and the interest. I've already done the work, so it's not like there's a lot of work involved with the audit. But I'll have to, that's a possibility. Over time, that number goes down because of the statute from a practical point of view. And so that's what a business, if I haven't been doing stuff in the U.S., that as I make decisions, once I trigger Nexus for that state, that entity, even though I have different ways to distribute my product, will have to collect for that state.
Sure.
So either I avoid it, or if I haven't been successful, I have to turn on that return because it's only going to increase over time.
Sure.
Most companies will increase 10% sales, and it won't take 6-7 years down the road, and that number will be material to anyone's perspective.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess what I was driving at is an international seller, non-US based, who definitely has Nexus and definitely, according to the law of that state, is required to submit sales tax, but just decides to break the law of that state by not doing so. And I guess the point that I would make to my own customers on that is, and neither you or I are attorneys, obviously, and nor would we ever advocate breaking the law. But the other thing to bear in mind is they may never come after you in Perth, Australia, or in Edinburgh, Scotland, individually, but they can take action against your business activities within that state. Is that not correct, Doug?
They can, because if you have consigned inventory in that state, they can seize that inventory as part of the tax lien. And so if I have created Nexus, but I'm not complying, you know, they have no jurisdiction outside the U.S., but you do have property in the U.S., and they can send a tax or the sheriff's office would put a tax lien and embargo or, you know, and bound that property.
Sure.
At Amazon, and then you couldn't sell it. So now I have not heard of that happening, but it's not uncommon for – I've not seen that too much in the – internet world, because consigned inventory is relatively new in the last decade, but that is not an uncommon practice for businesses that operate in the U.S. that if they become in arrears with sales tax, that a lien can be put against the property or a padlock on the business, and until the liability is taken care of.
Okay.
Usually that's extreme cases, and people have ignored lots of notices.
Sure.
So that's the bite that the state would have. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the other, let me put one more on. I think the bigger thing is, though, is from a customer that if I know I do need to report, then whatever will happen will come out of my margin and at some point, and it'll be 4 years worth coming out of 1 year's sale. Is that disruptive to the business or not? So how do you want to manage the business to manage that risk? And it may be more than one state. So when you look at that number and going, hey, if I make a 20% margin, sales tax is 8%. Well, if I've got 4 years, I've got 32%. I don't make any profit 1 year. Yeah. So is that there's that risk.
Yeah. So that's having determined that amount, just going back to what we were saying earlier, the amount of your exposure, that's what's going to enable you to make the decision whether that's a risk you'll carry into the future or whether it's something you really want to get sorted out now and potentially avoid penalties if you do get audited. What is the likelihood of an audit, Doug, and what would be the cost of an audit other than obviously the back taxes that are due?
I think the more sales, the likelihood of audit varies by different states. The more populated states, Texas, California, Florida, where the population is, where people sell, they're fairly sophisticated in terms of identifying who is doing business in their states. We have a couple states that have sued Amazon and eBay for a list of customers. And some of the states have been successful. There's still some in a court saying, yeah, they don't owe the tax, but we need to know who it is so we can go after them directly. So I think the likelihood in from an average point of view of a small, say less than a couple hundred thousand sales in a state is pretty low. But I think as time goes on, it won't be, it's not zero. It's not 100% by any means. The larger the client you are and the more brand that you have out there, a recognizable brand, the more likely the states will start taking a look at you. So I don't look at it from year to year. I always tell clients, in the next 10 years, what's the likelihood of being audited? You know, and so it's probably not 10%, it's probably 20% in most cases. Okay. And so then I always say, don't think of it in 1 year, think of it in 4 years. What would that tax liability be against your margin for that year with a 20% plus chance within the next 10 years? And if that answer is palatable, well, then you can make those decisions. If that answer is unacceptable, well, then we've talked about a couple of things that you can start doing now to reduce that risk.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. And I think the last thing I'd put on from a business perspective on the benefit of getting audited is if you ever wanted to sell your business, it's going to be pretty tough or if not impossible to sell a business with a massive sales tax liability hanging over its head. That's another thing to think about, isn't it?
It's probably a third of my time in working with clients each and every week. Somebody selling an internet business or a software company, and the buyer is going, show me your documents of where you have Nexus, where your compliance, and what you've been doing on it. Just before our call, I just got off a call with a client. The exact same set of questions. They were trying to sell their business and hadn't done anything, and so we're now doing a review for them.
Right.
And if that's a likelihood, that honestly may be one of the higher motivators to get compliant.
Okay. Great. Well, that's really, really helpful information, Doug. I think that the next question is, you know, practically speaking then, okay, so, you know, we might decide what our course of action is, how are we going to put that in place, and what can you and your team help with for guys who'd like to make use of your services? So perhaps you can sort of walk us through the practical steps of moving forward with this idea.
The practical steps is generally a client will just send me, hey, I've got these questions, and everybody comes at these a slightly different. It may be on the taxable side, it may be on the Nexus questions, maybe on my overall, may have multiple businesses, and I'll take a look at those questions, and then I'll send out a standard questionnaire worksheet that I want a client to walk through, and that'll just save a whole bunch of time on a call. And then based on that, we kind of walk through and kind of the rationale that we did in this call. What's your true exposure? What's the minimum you should be doing? And if I've got a complicated situation where I've got material sales in multiple states and I've got exposure in multiple states, often the strategy may be, hey, let's take care of two states this year, let's take care of two states next year. But overall, you want to start moving towards a compliance. So starts with a question in an email. I'll send, here's what I need completed from you to have a conversation. Then we walk through the conversation, and the recommendations is based on your facts and circumstances.
Okay, and then there's a bunch of admin to do, I guess, in terms of actually getting sales tax permits for each state. That's a bureaucratic process, simple process. How would you characterize that, and how do you help with that process?
And that's part of that process. That once you decide, hey, what states we're going to collect in and why, who you're operating through, your own website or others, what are the mechanics to turn in on the switch for the sales tax, getting the applications done. That's very administrative. We do that all the time. Client can do it. We can do that. The other is also, which we hadn't brought up on the call yet, is at that point, maybe outsourcing. So if I really don't have active operations here in the U.S., and I've got three states that I need to file sales tax on, then it may make sense to outsource those returns. And there's a set procedure that we put into place of when the numbers need to come in a fund and checking account where the amount to pay the return gets put in, and then it gets automated and you don't have to worry about it. And often that cost of that far exceeds the internal of, hey, I've got somebody that's got to remember to send, you know, six states returns by the 20th of each month and go in and fund it and all of those different steps. So that's often a lot of online sellers will, once they determine what their operations are, where they're going to collect, the next step is, hey, is outsourcing fit for me? And because I just don't really want to do that.
Yeah. Okay. And I think for most business owners, and this is a constant challenge, you know, you're better spending the time focusing on what you do, which is growing the business, and letting other people do the admin and boring tax collection stuff. So I'm all for outsourcing it. But you can look after that for guys as well. You've got people who can run those collection and remitting services. Yeah.
That's right, and it's only boring to people who deem it boring. It's not boring to me, so that's a good thing. So to grab somebody who's passionate about what they do, just like those that are on this call are passionate about selling their products on the internet. You're right, that focused rather than sales tax. And I hope the whole call overall will help people understand what the questions are and where they have to take the next steps. Because I see this topic just consume countless of hours within companies and nothing ever gets done. So I'm hoping that this was beneficial to people.
It definitely is, Doug, and I think we've covered it hopefully and fairly succinctly. I know it's a dry topic for a lot of us internet sellers. Are much more interested in a lot of other stuff, but it's one of those necessary evils of business, as you've outlined. It's something that people have got to take care of, and with Amazon and the number of warehouses they have means that most Amazon sellers are going to have Nexus in a bunch of states. And your very practical advice on assessing the situation and coming up with a sensible plan of action to get on the right side of the law for the future is really helpful. So I've put your email on the notes, but I'll also put a link below the video. And anyone who wants to contact you for advice, I just encourage to click on the link, send Doug an email, and he will take good care of you. Because Doug came recommended to me. I should have said this at the start of the call. But he's a specialist, and he knows what he's talking about. And you do a lot of work for internet sellers, don't you, Doug? So you're well experienced in this mm-hmm. particular area. So, Doug, it just remains to say thanks again for your time. Any final thoughts or comments or anything that we've missed that you'd like to cover now?
No, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm certain that people in the audience listening, that once they kind of walk through this and they get this task behind them, then the anxiety and the frustrations of all this will disappear very quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Doug, thank you so much for your help, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.